I gotta go to sleep. I
okay. Thank you all for your input.
Happy New Year, everybody. Happy holidays.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. And you know we have to do house cleaning at the top of the hour. The rest of you guys, wait a minute. The rest of you guys, just hold on. I'll be right back. We got to do a little house cleaning here, and we'll be right back.
Creative Unity Collective, alternating Friday nights, midnight to 3, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Once upon a time when we were colored, stolen from the mother. 400 years later, Mr. Charlie's on some other. Take this as an affirmative act, to slap after whack. Catch brothers, sisters who were falling through the cracks. Creativity and unity, the keys to maintain our humanity and our sanity, no vanity. Materialism, big willy crap, just progressive elevation. Can I get a soul clap? Keep it going on. CUC, keep it going on. Keep it going on. Creative unity, keep it going on.
All right, you're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. My name is Kamau Kalfani. We are in my zone. The show is Underneath the Learning Tree, and we are talking about some very interesting stuff here. And we'll go back to the phone since they are on fire. All right. Good morning. You're on BAI.
Hi. How you doing?
All right. Let me let a couple of people in here.
Sure. Great.
All right. And good morning.
Good morning.
And good morning. Uh-oh.
Hold on.
Good morning.
Hello?
Hold on.
Okay.
And let's get one more. All right. We got about four folks here.
Hello. Yeah.
All right. And so let me start with that first gentleman that said hello.
Hi.
What's your name?
Eric.
Okay, Eric, go ahead. You were about to say something.
Yeah. Great show. I agree with 99.9% of what you're saying. I just want to throw something into the mix here. And,
sure.
I hope it doesn't freak people out. But one word that was used earlier when you were started off your conversation was the term redneck.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very disparaging word.
I know, and I intentionally used it.
Oh, okay. Okay. I got gotcha.
You. Yeah, because, and I was speaking to a particular group, class, section, and I need to be very clear about something. See, unlike some of my counterparts in different arenas, you know, when I'm sure, and I do not take a step back, I don't, you know, backpedal and all that. But when it comes to the issue of racism toward me and the group that I come from, I handle it a little differently than perhaps some other people because I understand racism is a relationship, you know. In order for part of that construct to exist, you have to participate in it. And by and large portions, much of the black community participates in it, especially from a deprived, slave-like posture. And I don't submit to that, you know. As a human being, I may be submissive in matters of issues of etiquette. You know, I may not talk as loud or something like that. But when it comes to those type of principles, I'm pretty in your face about it. And how you deal with it, that's your business because you participated in that construct and now you've brought it to my doorstep. And when you bring it to my doorstep, to me, that's the equivalent of saying I'm willing to deal with whatever comes, you know. So I don't, you know, when I intended to say something, I intended to say it. And I usually, I choose my words pretty carefully. But where I come from, the idea of a redneck is this guy, and I, you notice I said tobacco chewing, pointy shoe wearing. And so I'm not trying to be apologetic or sweet or sugarcoat to that crowd that I know actually thinks my extension is a... In fact, let me tell you two things, and then I'm going to let you guys chime in on this. First of all, very recently in Patterson, there was this thing with this noose hanging at a construction work site, right? Now, as many... They were repairing a bridge, and as many years as that bridge has been there, there has never been a noose that showed up at the bridge, right? The construction workers were, in fact, having trouble with some of the residents. I don't know the nature of the trouble, but suddenly a noose shows up, and one of the ward people, Vera Ames, in an article in the paper said, well, I've seen them using rope to hoist things, and I said, how stupid can you be? Do you know what a noose looks like? You know what I'm saying? And here's this noose, and they had it in the newspaper of the Herald News. This noose is hanging here looking like a hangman's noose. And I said to myself, I've seen people using rope at construction sites to hoist things. They don't use a Western, old West hanging noose to do it, right?
Right.
That's the first thing. It took me about 30 seconds to assess that perhaps someone in the construction site put this there, given the construction arena and some of the sentiment that runs through there. So that's one thing. The other thing was that, what was the other thing?
Sure, that's completely reprehensible. There's no excuse for it.
I'll remember in a minute what I was going to say.
Yeah, okay. I love talking dialogue and being frank, and let's talk about the whole ball of wax, you know, and let's talk about everything. That's great. But sometimes, even on BAIs once in a while, when I hear, certain terms being used, I think it might be a little misunderstood to some people. I just wanted to bring the point out about that particular word, because I think other people might, misinterpret it.
Well,
I kind of understood where you were coming from, but when I'll give you another example. I'm a white male, and many times I'll read in the newspaper. In fact, it was even on the front page of the news when John Lindsay died. I guess it was about 2 years ago. They described him as a WASP, right?
White Anglo-Saxon.
Exactly. That's a very, very degrading, disparaging term. But people don't think of it as that. You can look it up in any dictionary.
Right.
And it'll say contemptuous.
Now, see, that's a very good point. And I'll tell you why that's such a good point. Because if you notice, I don't know how long you've been listening, but I played a lot of music where they were throwing the N-word all over the place.
Songs, right. And I was thinking as it was playing, wow, there's so many people, African-American and white, who are... offended by the music. And then I was listening to the message of what the performers, were saying, and I understood where they were coming from. I know what they were saying through the lyrics, but, again, somebody else would listen to that and say, here's the N-word over,
Right. The implication of language is an issue. But now I want to show you the other side of this. I mentioned before I don't do dumb blonde jokes. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't do because if I've developed a sensitivity toward myself, then I have to extend that sensitivity to others, even those who I may place in a class of enemy, right? So that being understood, when I use a phrase, it is intentional and it is designed to invoke certain responses. That being said, though, I think that we can take a lesson. Because of this conversation, we all who are listening need to reevaluate our posture and our sensitivities, because as a black man in this society, I listen to crap daily that people don't give a second thought to, that offends me constantly, right? And I'm saying, that was so callous, and this person, to them, it was just flippant. It was just no problem. And then when I raised the issue, they're looking at me in a skewed posture like, don't you think you're being a little overly sensitive? You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
Somebody else wanted to chime in.
I want to chime in.
Go ahead.
What you're saying right now is important because we have something that's happening in language and vernacular, how we use things. Things have been abridged to the point where, in what the language meant initially, if you go to old dictionaries, because even new dictionaries...
I'm so glad you said it, bro. Go
...are
ahead.
Becoming abridged...
Go ahead.
...to the point that when certain terms are thrown around, we don't have the understanding. Now, you were discussing reality before.
Yes.
And you were discussing bringing 500 people into a room. And if two people brought 500 people into the room, you have 1,000 people in the room. And I don't think any of those 1,000 people could determine what is reality for them, and what is reality in terms of the language and what it was intended to mean when it was initially used.
So wouldn't we first have to agree on our gauging tools?
This is the confusion that somehow has been allowed to permeate through society, and I want to drive this closer because I want to ask. When we use the term Jew, you use the term Jew, and your, one of your previous callers made the purpose of differentiating between Jew and Zionist.
Right.
Now, when I hear people of European extraction call themselves Jews, I have no problem with that. You know, they're fine. If we have to go, we can go to the Old Testament and dissolve all of this,
but
in the context of going back through the years of language, the term Jew is a European term,
if I'm not mistaken, comes from jewelry, right? If I'm not mistaken, the term jewelry came out of jewelry, right? And the etymology of these words is also important. But two things, I want to let that brother with the big, deep voice in because he's been waiting to say something. Go ahead, bro.
Okay, my name's Warren, and I got to say, I've become totally confused on every previous group that has come together has just driven home some questions for me. Like, I got them written down. It's like, how do you talk about Israel and not talk about Jews? I think it was Susan that
right.
sort of almost attacked. Well, I won't
right.
say attacked, but she was sort of confused. I never knew it was an African American problem in Israel. So I was very confused by the whole concept of talking about Israel and sort of separating Jews out of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that confused me. The other one was, I don't know, as a black man, I guess I sort of associate whiteness with Jewishness.
Right.
And so sometimes it's like, you know, a half a dozen of one, six of the other, you know, it's like...
Well, how do you differentiate between, you know, when a guy standing in front of you who, for all intents and purposes, looks like what you know to be as a white guy.
Right.
And then he stops you and says, no. I'm Jewish. To me, that's like a Jamaican really arguing you down that he's a Jamaican and the other guy's a Trinidadian, when in reality they're both Africans.
Right.
And what they're arguing is the port that the ship stopped
right.
at.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So my argument may be the most valid posture, but to them it doesn't suit their reality.
Right. And so I definitely what was getting you when you were talking about that. It's like, which is the biggest, reality? I definitely got the 500 or one. The other thing that I, you know, was really brought up is that the thought of the what BAI is. And what I hear is from people that were dissidents and now sort of in control is that it is a platform for the voice of the voiceless. And they tie this usually to Lou Hill. But what I've heard of Lou Hill is that he wasn't as democratic as that phrase would lend itself.
Where did you hear
Lou Hill didn't believe that listeners should have as much input as I think is being trying to be decided by the current faction. I find this sort of a odd disconnect as How do we go forward? How do we make it more democratic? And can you tie it to Lou Hill? If Lou Hill didn't believe in that type of democracy.
And the gentleman that was just about to ask you.
Yeah, what is the faction now as you see it?
Well, who's running things?
As you see it, yeah. You just said, used the word factions, right?
I would say the people that were formally tossed off the radio.
Who would that be?
When I said voices of voiceless, I think the last person I heard use that was Amy Goodman.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. You know, I mean, when I say factions, I still respect. You know, so maybe if that was a, you know,
well, before
you get me to clarify the use of the word, what you mean by that?
Oh, faction?
Yes.
I just meant group.
Okay.
So maybe it was.
Excuse me. This kind of loose talk, which is so vague, is very irritating to me.
Okay.
So do I have a chance now to say something about the issue of Jews, et cetera?
Yeah, let me just say something before you say that. I wanted to raise this issue previously, but I know that guy wanted to get in, so I held off. I wanted to say, when I was talking about the origin of words, and I'm so glad he raised the issue of the dictionaries, because I used, first of all, usually I don't use the terminology Jew, right? Because I think it's an incomplete statement. It's like I really am irritated when I hear people saying blacks. Black what? You know, it's like this hanging phrase.
I know exactly what
you're saying. So, you know, I usually will say Jewish people or Jewish group or something, or, you know, black African-American people or something like that, but complete the phrase. But when I was playing this music, I intentionally loaded up on the N-word, right? And two reasons that I did this. First of all, I have heard nonsensical application of this word. I was on the train tonight. These guys, first of all, it wasn't a black guy in the crowd. It was three Puerto Rican, one Puerto Rican guy, one Dominican guy, and one guy who was obviously mixed because they kept calling him a spigger, which I was like, huh? But they must have used the word nigger about 10,000 times on that train. And I'm sitting there saying, why must people insist on identifying with the bottom of the bucket? But that lends to what he was saying about the dictionary. Because when I've had people tell me intellectually, well, you know, a nigger is just a ignorant person. I said, no. Let me go get this Encyclopedia Britannica from 1927 that I have the whole set in my house. And when you open up and you find nigger, every reference to that word is of African origin. Negroid, black people from Africa. And it goes through about three pages of definitions explaining that a nigger is somebody who has to have African blood in them. And my point here is that some of the, pardon the pun, whitewashing of these definitions today, those younger people must be made to understand to what those words meant and the weight that they carried, and you don't just snap your fingers and erase them because you've been hit with some pseudo-intellectualism.
I was recently on a subway, and the same kind of thing happened with me with a group of, young teenagers. And I'm white, and it makes me very uncomfortable. I would like to tell them, you're only hurting yourself, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it would be any point, and plus the fact that I'm frightened. Now, what I'd like to say about Jews is this. There was a German author named Franz Werfel, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature at one point in his career, who wrote a book entitled The 40 Days of Muzadach. It concerned the genocide of the Armenian people by the Turkish people, and at its base of his theme as to trying to find out why the Turks have such enmity toward the Armenians, it all came down to one word, jealousy. Now, I maintain that the entire world is jealous of the Jewish people for their intelligence, for their perspicacity, for their willingness to survive, for their ingenious inventions, from Albert Einstein to Robert J. Oppenheimer to literature to movies to every form of human culture and endeavor, to spirituality, you name it, to the Kabbalah. The Jews are a great people.
All right.
How will I have?
Don't run away. Don't run away. Don't run away.
I'm not running anywhere.
All right, now. All right, let's applaud the Jewish community for their contributions, their accolades, everything that they've done, right? Now, let's look right next to them, and sitting right next to them are their black brothers.
Excuse me, where? Sitting where?
I'm being hypothetical.
I know.
Yes. So don't interrupt me, because I didn't interrupt you. Stay there, but don't go away, please.
All right.
Don't go away.
Okay. All right.
And now here's my point. For some reason, and perhaps you can help me on this, here you have a group of people who, not only would I say equal what the Jewish community has done, but I'm bold enough and adventurous enough, maybe it's because I'm partial, to say that they have surpassed what the contributions to society, etc.
Okay, we can get into differences of
right, which is minor. Minor is not really the point. The point that I'm making is, why is it that society, both here and abroad and through history, has had this extremely different approach to two groups of people doing kind of the same thing?
I cannot answer that question. Excuse me.
Okay, let him answer that, and then I'm going to get to you.
Good, okay. Because it's too huge a question for me. I'm not that much of an historian or a sociologist or a psychologist, et cetera, so I back off from even that.
Okay.
I request that you allow me not to answer.
Okay, fair enough. Let me let that other gentleman in. You don't go away. Don't go away, though.
My question is, you know, you're talking about in recognition of achievements, but I want to know how come, and just looking at something as simple as a straight, direct, when we ask about reparations, I sat and watched a debate, two Democratic, Bill Bradley and Gore, say, you know, basically blow off the African-American community about reparations. And then reparations are being sought for the victims of the Holocaust, of the modern Holocaust.
And I think they won,
also, let me finish.
Go ahead.
Whenever I'm victimized by a situation, when I say I collectively, whenever African Americans are victimized and we express our discomfort or dissatisfaction with things, we're being told we're overreacting. And yet, you know, when you look at it, just like you said, how can the world, how come there hasn't been a state set up for African Americans? We have people like Trent Lott running around here, and he just happened to be one stupid enough to speak, all right? The rest of them in secret don't want to treat us fairly and I recognize us and give us what we do just common day-to-day, not alone with reparations, but just day-to-day. When you look at people like this Central Park Five, we're not paying taxes to be served and protected, and society isn't offering us the same shake that everybody else is getting. And when you give us, the job actions, affirmative action, people say, oh, you know, well, you know, they want to blow us off with everything. We're being told. But yet, when on the other side, someone of European extraction who calls themselves Jewish says anything, nobody says you're overreacting. You know, except those rednecks
right.
with the pointy shoes.
Right. But look, let me point something out. Here's a very interesting thing to point out. Every day, legislation is being pushed. Issues of the Holocaust are placed in the school and curriculum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Right.
But on the other side, when you look at the African-American community, if they go to deal with legislation, if they say that this should be taught, it is death. I mean, people just freak out altogether. And what I'm saying is, it is not really incumbent upon the black community to actually be championing these causes, because the reality of the matter is I've never suggested that the school was supposed to teach my son his history and culture. That's my job.
Championing which causes?
The cause of setting the record straight and leveling the playing field as far as what happened, what transpired, and how to set it right. Because it's like, to me, that's like a white guy coming to explain to me about how I should behave on the issue of dealing with reparations.
No,
or
no
my,
way they can
no,
do that.
Exactly
of
my
of
point.
Course.
Exactly
yeah,
my point.
Yeah, I asked this gentleman a question. He made it. He used.
But
the
wait,
word.
Let me just finish this phrase.
Go ahead.
So, if you really look at it, what really should be happening is, and I say in quotations, those good white folks should really be the ones who are saying to their white brethren, this is not right.
I agree.
We need
now,
to fix this.
Please, let me say something to add to right to that. I have to, if I was only a poet, I want to start, I think some kind of a campaign has to be started so that black males who get a lot of the brunt of all of this, you know, prejudice and bias and racism, who get more, I think, than black women, okay, should try to band together somehow so as to explain themselves and defend, you know, because they're accused of this, that, you know, thousands of things. What do you think about that idea?
Well, I think that the – wait, does somebody else want to jump in there?
Yeah.
That gentleman used the word. If you put on the phone
– let that gentleman jump in.
Please, let me ask that gentleman a question. When he said we should have a separate state.
Well, you know, I'm saying a separate state, but, you know, there have been movements that have tried to organize in the past, but they have been infiltrated by intelligence organizations on behalf of this government and have been virtually left almost completely destroyed.
There have been
organizations that have tried to organize people to recognize their nationality, you know, because this racialism is something that doesn't behoove any of us.
Exactly.
In a real sense. We had nationalities before we were enslaved. We came from nations. There were nations that had treaties that recognized the United States as a nation, you know, as a union at that time. And yet, all of a sudden, we're subjugated to being three-fifths of man in the Constitution.
So,
when you say organizing, give me a Constitution I can establish for myself and let me have a state somewhere. Give me a parcel. You're supposed to give me 40 acres and a mule.
Yeah.
Give it to me in one region of the country, and you know.
That'll never happen. That'll never. Okay.
Why not? It happens.
Because I don't think at this point it's not going to happen. And that's why we're not. There is no more place. When I hear arguments that come up about 60s concepts of separate state, I say, well, it's not going to happen.
That's
but
they went so far as to colonize or recolonize. What was that for? Why are they going to be giving up anything at this point?
But it has already happened.
Oh.
It has already happened because when you look at the level of segregation in this country right now, it is already happening. The problem is that the people who are calling for it haven't really. That might have been overboard. What I'm really trying to say is that it is not something that you ask for; it's something that you do. And the reality of the matter is that what it would actually take if Massa didn't feel like he wanted to give us a place in the sun, what it would actually take is a rebellion and. To be
right.
Very,
it has to be a rebellion by ballot.
It has to be.
It can't be violent.
Listen,
now, I
wait, no, 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 wait, wait, wait. I wasn't finished.
See,
wait. See, let me finish. See, that is part of the myth that comes up, and that is part of the problem with discussing these type of issues, because you will not go anywhere on earth in any human reality or any animal kingdom and find a place where sociological change occurred and there was not an issue of violence that occurred. It doesn't happen. And Alan Bozak said it very simply. When he was talking about the United States coming into existence and what they had to go through, why did they think something different had to happen for the people in South Africa? Why was this double standard applied? In fact, wherever black people talk about liberation and raising up, they themselves have to deal with the fact that no one is giving up anything. And if you're serious, then it's going to take you to a plateau that inevitably most people seeking independence wind up at.
Your opening song, though, stated, you know, niggas are afraid of revolution.
Well, here's the juxtaposition.
Is it not? What do you mean? What juxtaposition?
Here's the point. That's in essence what I'm putting on the table, that the conversation of liberation and freedom and justice and equality, contrary to the 60s movement of so-called nonviolence, the reality of the matter is if that movement was really that effective, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Was Fred Hampton,
can I make 2 points real quick?
Let's do one more round, and then I got to let some other people, because the phone is
about to go.
Wait, don't go, because if you leave, I don't know which button you are. Hold on until we finish.
All right. Oh, okay.
No, one of you guys, go ahead. You were about to say
I just want to say 2 things. One, as a white European male, that's what I'd be considered. Absolutely, every African-American in the United States deserves reparations. Absolutely. Unequivocally.
Can we get about 50 million more saying that?
I hope so. And I'm going to be honest with you. I can't tell you how many arguments in my own family, and I try to educate in my own family these issues. And it is difficult.
But you know,
I disagree with it, because I believe that only descendants, which can be proven by papers and documents of slaves, should be given reparations. Not every single black human being in the United States.
Well,
every single Jew did not collect. Jewish.
Let me ask you a question.
Right,
the guy who just said that. What's your name?
Something. Black people didn't get. They just got the right to vote, last month. So and they were paying taxes, for decades after they got,
Let me ask a question of the gentleman who just said that they have to be able to prove it, basically.
Yes.
Right? And I find that interesting because, look, I don't know what proof has to do with it. I don't know what law has to do with it. Let me finish. I don't know what law has to do with it when we're talking to a bunch of lying thieves to begin with, when 371 treaties with the indigenous people, and they broke every single one. They signed paper right in front of you, swear is good, take pictures, and when you walk out of the room, they tear it up and come and shoot you.
Right.
So, what proof? In fact, I'm going to tell you something. This is going to sound very radical. But the reality of the matter is that you could take every man, woman, and child in the African-American, African-Caribbean community and offer them reparations without ever checking a single thing, because the level of devastation that occurred throughout this entire scenario is such that there's really, and I'm not saying don't try, because I think that the country is supposed to die trying, right? There is really nothing that you could do to replace what happened. But my point is, you do not walk away, and the reality of the matter is that if you took my dignity, you can't give it back to me. I got to come and get it.
Okay, now,
I got to let you guys go.
On this very station, I heard a discussion with a youngish black lawyer who was discussing the reparations question and mentioning all these banks and all these firms, that were profiting on the backs of slavery, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
She even used the concept of documentation. So I'm not making it up.
I know that we're in the land of documentation, so I understand that. She's a lawyer.
I have to say one thing. When you talk about reparations, you're talking about the reparations are only based on slavery. But what about what about a point of making reparations on the fact of the racist oppression that we face since we've been free?
Every group has faced racial and ethnic pain.
All right, group, you very much. I got to cut you loose. Thank you very much for your input. We got to let another group in here.
Okay.
All right. Here comes the next wave. Boy, can I get a drink of water? Here comes the next wave. All right.
Hello? Hello?
Good morning, you're on.
Hey,
hello.
Good morning, and I got one more coming
good
in.
Morning.
Hello? Good morning. Good morning.
Oops, turn that radio down.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, just in regards to the gentleman who was just, I don't know, he just rated himself in regards to how black people should, you know, receive, you know, reparations or what, you know, what he heard from this black woman who was a lawyer. I think it's absurd in regards to what black people have suffered for so long in this country, not to mention the Indians as well, what you were saying with the treaties that were broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, it's very appalling to me to know that there are people who are insensitive, who do not take the time to research before they open their mouth.
Mm.
You know, it's just very, very upsetting.
Okay, and we have some other folks. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. I was listening, and it's interesting, but you're hitting on a lot of different points here. First of all, there doesn't seem to be a very clear consensus as to ethnicity versus religion, you know, in terms of Jewish.
Well,
Jewish
I think it's pretty clear, but I think some people have.
Well, some people seem to have.
They've invoked their own right of, you know,
uh-huh.
Like we're not playing by those rules.
Right. They constantly interchange and exchange the meaning of the definition of ethnicity versus race versus religion, and it just constant, you know, it's just a play of back and forth of the words, and the meanings are all interchanging and it's very confusing. I mean, I know the difference, but I mean, people seem to use those words interchangeably so much. Okay, then there's the other issue where you have the predominance of black, so-called black African-American people who many times are of the Christian religion. And, for instance, just today, I guess it's after 12 now, so, but yesterday, I don't know what time it is. What time is it, by the way?
It's about
2:30.
Oh, it's 2:30. Okay, so yesterday.
37, actually.
Yesterday was Jesus' birthday, right? December
20th. Come on, don't get me started.
Oh, wait. Okay, let's not get into that. What I'm just saying is the point I'm trying to make, a lot of people who are Christian and black African-American people who are Christians, and they believe in Christ, they worship Christ, they go to church on Sundays, they tell their children about Jesus, they have Bibles, they're constantly quoting the Bible. Jesus was Jewish. Yet those same people will sometimes say things, make disparaging remarks about Jewish people.
Right.
So I'm saying, how can you worship Christ, who is Jewish, and then turn around and say, well, the Jewish people did this to me, and the Jewish people... I mean, it's very confusing. So that's another confusing issue that constantly goes on,
mm-hmm.
Interchange, you know, or mental interchange that's going on constantly in our society. We just keep...
But I think it demonstrates the inconsistency that's going on. And because, look, first of all, again, people not doing their homework. It was the people who were murdering the Christians who called them Christians, the followers of Christ, right?
Church.
All right, I got to chime in with some credentials here. In fact, my father, and while I am not a Christian, but I come from a long line of Christian ministers and all of that, and my father was a Bible scholar. Right? He's a minister, et cetera, et cetera. And people would come from far and wide to consult with my father. And needless to say, some of the most intense scrutinizing conversations, which, you know, my father and I used to joust at the breakfast table. And the reality of the matter is I got to the point where I started pulling punches.
Uh-huh.
Because I began to understand that the inconsistency was showing up in a bunch of places, and I would get into these conversations, and I'd see that look in my father's eye, and I was like, uh-huh, I'm beginning to understand. And in deference, as his son, you know, there were many places where I just backed up because my intention, as he taught me, was not to tamper with another man's faith.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay, there's one other issue I wanted to touch on.
Let this other young lady say something real quick.
Yes. Okay.
I'm very young, actually. I'm only 20 years old. I'm a white female, and I live in a very diverse community, and I'm also Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I respect every other religion.
Mm-hmm.
I live amongst black people, Hispanic people. I respect everybody. And I also want to pick a slight bone with the host for the simple fact that I feel he contradicted himself. He said that there's white skin privilege, but at the same time, he said there's good white folk.
Well, where is the contradiction?
Yeah, that's no contradiction.
I feel, personally, I feel this contradiction because how is it going to be, it's to me, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to make any sense to anybody else because I don't get white skin privilege at all. I've been discriminated. I've just been through hell.
But you see, and let me say this in all fairness, and I'm very serious when I say this. First of all, you actually represent the epitome of white skin privilege for the simple reason that you're 20 years old, you're
female.
White, and you're female, right?
Uh-huh.
Do you understand that it was, by and large, white females who many times gave the command for black men to be hung and disfigured?
But how are you going to base something like that?
Let me finish what I'm saying, because I think it's very important for you to understand. And you see, I see a lot of young white people who associate themselves with good postures, and they're dealing from the bottom of the deck, meaning that they're not taking the high moral ground. They're associating, for instance, blackness with some derogatory cultural form, and they're passing that off as, you know, I'm cool with black people. And in reality, the black people themselves that they're dealing with would be kicked out of black society,
right?
But and let me tell you why this is important. This is important because if you are the good person that you're letting out to be, then you must see the totality of the scenario and not a corner of it and pass that off as the big picture. You see? Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I completely understand what you're saying, but that's what I'm saying. White skin privilege, I've never, ever had anything handed out to me on a platter.
Let me explain why. See, the Chinese say that the greatest technique is the one that's applied to you, and you don't know it was applied.
All right.
Right? You have to understand that just your walk, and I want you to do a test. Here's a test for you.
Okay.
All right? I want you, the next time you're in a place where there are predominantly black people, right, I would like you to first observe how they talk to each other, and then I would like you to actually raise your voice. You know, pick an argument or something with somebody black and raise your voice to the biggest one in there. And I want you to watch their physical action. Watch their eyes. Watch their initial movement.
Can I cut you off right there? Because I have done that. I really honestly have done that. And it led to the point where me and the person got into a fist fight.
But
and
that,
I wasn't coming out wrong. I wasn't saying nothing.
That's in an arena where they know you.
No, they didn't.
Go. I'm trying to tell you, young lady, that you, as a young white girl, white woman, however you want to phrase yourself, I'm trying to tell you that the hundreds and hundreds of years of investment of manipulation of power give you almost an immediate blank check.
To the point
where the problem is you don't know it. That's the problem.
I wish I honestly felt like that, because where I come from, it's not like that for me. I have to struggle, and I've been struggling my whole entire life. And it's just, that's what I'm trying to explain to you. I've never had anything put out on the platter for me for the simple fact that my color, I've been discriminated. I know what that feels like. Maybe not to the extent that
hello?
You know.
Hello?
Yeah, could I respond to her comment?
Go ahead, please.
I'm a young black man who lives in the Bronx. I'm 35 years old. I have personally experienced racism. I mean, in terms of privileges, this young white sister right here, she says that, you know, she's been discriminated against. Sister, I've been in conflicts. I fought in the Bronx, in Arlington Avenue in the Bronx, been called nigger just for walking through a neighborhood with my friends.
I live in East New York, and I've been called white cracker because I'm walking through my neighborhood. What does that show for? Like, I have nothing against nobody. I'm so open-minded, it's not even funny. But I'm just trying to say that I can honestly put my hand out to y'all because I know what it's like. And I've been made fun of because of the way I speak.
Can I jump in, please?
Wait, let me let the sister jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Who, me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I did say that a lot of points are being raised here, and a few of them I wanted to touch. I just spoke about the Jewish birth, the black people who are Christians and, you know, Jewish, you know, but they worship Jews and then, you know, Jewish man, Jew, Christ, and then blah, blah, and then during the week they may say something derogatory. However, there are two other points that you just brought up. Okay. Now, before that, there was a man who called, I think his name is Jeff, and he expounded on all the achievements of the Jewish people, you know, for centuries. And actually, I think he has documentation of those proofs of those things that many Jewish people did achieve. And I think he has reasons for being proud of his people. Okay, and I agree with him 100%. However, he's asking for proof of slavery and from people who destroyed many records, and I'm sure who would very, very conveniently lose any documentation that anyone who would prove their slavery back to, you know, claim reparations. So I don't really feel that that's valid, that they would have to prove that to get reparations, because, I mean, it just wouldn't hold water. Okay, then the other thing is the thing that you just brought up, the host, Kamau,
yes.
Yeah, you brought up a fact that, certain people feel that blackness is a derogatory cultural form, and so on and so on. But, you know, if you really think about it, I think a lot of black people, I'm a woman of color, but I'm going to tell you, I feel that a lot of black people feed into that negative stereotype by, for instance, just telling this young black woman who's on, young white woman who's on the phone right now. She's very young, and she's just learning as she goes along. You're telling her that one man on the phone right now, he used the word carte blanche, and I guess that's a good way of putting it, telling her that white skin privilege. I mean, those terms right away, to me, it just slaps me in the face, because, first of all, I don't buy into it.
Let me interject, sister. How can you not buy into it when it's reality?
No, well, the host made a very good point before earlier, and I forgot what frame of reference it was
about the relationship of racism.
Something you said that really hit home when you said people cannot do to you something if you don't buy into it. I forgot exactly
what I was pointing out was that racism was a relationship, and that. And let me say this personally. My articulation of these things as a black man in this society is a world of difference from how they affect me personally, because of how I've learned to deal in this arena and how I kind of catch things at the root and all of that. But it didn't start out like that. But what I was saying was that racism, a great part of racism is a relationship, and both parties have to participate in
it. Okay, so if I don't participate in this white, so-called white skin privilege, then, I mean, forget about it. It just doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist in my world.
No, it exists. It exists.
Not for me.
It exists for the
I've seen it. Can I demonstrate how it exists for you?
How?
Okay. You walk into a store, right? This young lady walks in behind you. You got a pocket full of money. You came to buy. You know exactly what you want. You walk over to the stand that you're going to buy something from, and you happen to notice in the reflection there's somebody standing there. They're watching you, right? All right. You don't pay it any mind. You pick up what you want. You go across the room. In the meantime, this young lady is a thief. Of course, I'm just using this hypothetically. She is a thief. And they are watching you, and you've got your money, and she's walking around talking to them, laughing and joking and flipping her hair and ripping them off blind, right? And it doesn't matter if they're black or white, because the contamination is intense and pervasive in the society. So you could get a black security guard scrutinizing you harder than the white security guard, and while they're watching you, she's ripping them off left and right, and then she comes over and wistfully says, "See you tomorrow," and walks out of the store, and they're still watching you.
That's their merchandise.
Right, but the
fact still remains,
if they're that
affected,
stupid, that they don't mind losing their merchandise by playing this stupid game, I'm all game
for it, too. But that's not the point.
I don't care if they watch me.
The crux of
the
point is...
They might be watching me because I'm beautiful.
The crux...
I mean, I don't can't.
Right.
I don't buy into it.
Right, but see, the point that you're missing, the point
no
that
no such thing as white
sister,
privilege.
The point that you're missing
well,
is whether you buy.
I don't buy it.
Listen, whether you buy into it or not, it is there.
Well,
that's the point.
That's the reality.
It doesn't exist for me.
That's the thing. It's there for me, too. I walked into my local Rite Aid, and I had the security guard watching me. I really need to take their stuff when I got money to buy.
But, sister, let me say this to you.
They watch everybody. That's what they're getting paid for.
Exactly. Not only that, nine times out of ten, they're watching more blacks more so frequently than they're watching whites.
But not if they have a suspicion. Not if they have a listen, not if they have a suspicion that that white person is actually from a particular sociological framework or
there
economic level,
exactly.
Then they will lump that person. Why do people who are so-called experts in an arena say this all the time? Blacks and poor whites.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what the relationship is.
Exactly.
Poverty.
No. Because
that's
if you,
right, economics, poverty.
No, it is an assumed posture because if you really check the record, black people in this country make big money.
Yes.
And in fact, their medium income may shock you if you look at some of these studies, and yet they are consistently lumped in a group together and put right next to poor whites.
Okay, let me just ask you one other question. I'm going to let other people have the floor. I just want to make one other point.
Okay, go ahead.
If you own the store, maybe you do own the store. Do you own the store?
I used to own the store.
Okay. So let's say you own the store right now.
Mm-hmm.
And people walked into your store. This young lady walked into the store,
mm-hmm.
and I walked into the store.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching me because I'm a person of color, and but you're just letting her just have carte blanche all over the store
mm-hmm.
because she's white.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the loser? Who would be the loser? Whose merchandise is going to be removed from that store?
Well, see,
who's going to lose revenue?
See,
you.
I agree with you that the issue.
Well, who does that? They're the fools.
Look, I agree
who
with
do
you.
I, care?
I agree with you that the issue of racism is an issue of stupidity.
Okay.
Can we all agree on that?
That's true.
All right, we're going to cut it loose right there.
Okay.
All right, everybody, have a good night.
All right.
Okay. Let me see. Wait a minute. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to take a little break right here. And we are going to come back in a couple of minutes. So everybody that's there, you can run to the bathroom or, you know, have a little discussion about this. And we will be right back.
This is Cornel West. And for the best in rhythm and blues, reggae, ska, calypso, and all the musical cultures in the rich African diaspora, I listen to the Midnight Ravers on alternate Fridays over listener-sponsored non-commercial radio WBAI 99.5 FM. The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special show.
who have brutalized us and made us the victims for the past 400 years, then it is time for us to do whatever is necessary to defend ourselves.
Here first, and some devils prevent this from being known. But you check out the books they own. Even Masons, they know it, they refuse to show it, yo. But it's proven in fact. It takes a nation of millions to hold us back.
Listening to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. My name is Kamau Kalfani. The show is Underneath the Learning Tree. And the mic is hot. It's so hot. Let's see. We got some more people on the line. Let's open it up. Good morning. You're on the air. All right.
Hello?
Yes.
Pertaining to that comment that was made about 20 minutes ago about the dignity, you can't get that back. And about that girl talking about because she was being called cracker, that's full circle. You can't feel sorry for her. You understand?
Uh-huh.
How about when brothers were called being called porch monkeys and eggplant and all that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That ain't cool. So what did she say?
I don't know.
Coming back to her, that's all.
It was her conversation.
Yeah,
all right.
But I feel...